most listened to sports presentation. You're listening to Primetime Sports with Bob McGowan on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
We are back. This is Primetime Sports for Thursday, August 22nd. I am Jeff Blair, sitting in for Bob McGowan, who is continuing his vacation. I'll be around as well. Tomorrow we'll have the Friday roundtable. Damian Cox is going to join me in a few moments. He will be my co-host today. Lots to talk about the NBA Players Association. Chris Paul, president of the association. A star player. And I've often wondered about the way the NBA Players Association does business compared to the way some of the other sports governing bodies, sports labor bodies do business. I mean, it seems to me the way to go is to get a legitimate labor leader, legitimate guy with a labor background calling the shots. When it comes to negotiating, a guy like Donald Fehr, a guy like Michael Wiener, somebody like that, as opposed to bringing in a guy as an amateur and putting him in a position of authority, even if it means he's just a figurehead. I really have a problem with that. We're going to deal with that topic. Jonathan Duhamel. He's the guy, if you watch poker and TV, this guy's the hoodie. He participated in the NHL alumni charity poker tournament, which will air on Sportsnet 360 in December. Played against guys like Phil Kessel, Theo Fleury, Darcy Tucker, and Brad May. September, the Full Tilt Poker Montreal Festival is coming up. And it'll probably be the biggest tournament ever in Canadian soil. And he'll be one of the people very much in the forefront of that. So he will join us in studio. Jean-Paul Morosi of Fox Sports will join us as well. Marshall Faulk and Chris Chelios, Hall of Fame defenseman. All that ahead on Primetime Sports. Hello, Mr. Cox.
Did I just walk through your shot?
I don't care.
See, are we on radio? Are we television?
I have no shot. We're on the internet. Okay. We're on Carrier Pigeon.
Yes.
And we're on Sportsnet 1-75. 1.75, I think we're on with one of the 200 Sportsnet.
Why can't we be on 360?
I don't know.
Well, Tim and Sid get to be on 360. Why can't we be on 360?
What? We're on 360 at 6?
Oh, see?
There you go.
Ask and ye shall receive.
Yeah.
Got to put your foot down. You're a 360 guy.
No, I'm not a 360
guy.
Yeah,
I think you are.
No, I'm not.
I think you can be.
Not a 360 guy. I'm much too old for that. You need to be young and hip. You need to be young and hip. Young and hip, like Eric Smith and Greg O'Halloran. That's what it's all about. And Paul Spaljarek.
Good day for the Jays, not losing.
Pretty good. I know they were cheering for the rain delay, but unfortunately they're having to play.
Looks pretty nice now in New York.
And you know what? You know who I feel sorry for? I feel sorry for the writers here, because you know as well as I do. You know as well as I do that
there were some flights out tonight.
It's New York. I don't care about that. You know that guys are sitting there at 1 o'clock going, please God. Please, God. I know I was a bad boy last night in the village, but if you can just make it rain this afternoon, I'll have a whole night off in New York. Please, God, please make it rain. I'm not talking about the early flights. Anyhow, yeah, the Jays are playing.
Some of us want to get home sometimes, you know.
They can get home, but they're on the road anyhow, so you're probably going to go on to Houston or wherever the hell it is they're playing. But the Jays aren't losing. That is a good sign so far. Rajai Davis has not done anything stupid. Alex Rodriguez is at the plate. So Nick Kiprios reporting that the Washington Capitals are... waiting for confirmation that Grabowski has accepted their bid, reportedly $3 million, according to the Belarusian version of sports, the Sporting News, which I believe is called Confronti Carpe. Anyhow, Mikhail Grabowski has been offered $3 million by the Capitals. No surprise.
No, well, you figured he'd get on with somebody. It is a bit of a surprise to. There's a bit of a battle going on out there, similar to what happened in baseball a number of years ago, between, you remember when it was all about, the money balls and sabermetrics, and then all, that's still kind of going on in a way.
It'll never end.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of going on in hockey right now, with people who say, no, there's all these new statistics that really explain what's really going on.
This would be Corsi.
I'm not going to,
Can you define Corsi to me?
No.
I always think career backup.
Now, I'm not dismissing anything. Okay. And frankly, I don't know a lot about it. But when Mikhail Grabowski, when the Leafs bought him out, sent him packing, mm-hmm. we said, what are you crazy? His numbers and this and that. He's going to be huge. Well, here we are on August 22nd, and yeah. he's finally getting a contract, and it's for 1 year.
And it's $3 million.
Which isn't bad.
No.
Because guys are going to take bigger haircuts than that. He replaces Mike Ribeiro, and he may do fine there. We'll see. But again, this shows the clash, and I can hang on. Yeah, I can feel my Twitter basket filling up already. This is kind of the clash between the people who might call themselves traditional hockey people, who would have a certain evaluation of a player, and those who would say, "Have you looked at his possession time? At his offensive zone possession time? What are you talking about?" And again, I'm not dismissing that stuff. I'm sort of between two worlds, and most of the time, I just don't really care. Mm-hmm. But in this one, this was a particularly interesting case. So Grabowski gets bought out by the Leafs and ends up probably, I was going to say, on a better team. They were a better team last year.
Pretty good situation for him, regardless, I would think.
Well, he's going to get a chance to play at times.
Mm-hmm.
With Alex Ovechkin, who at times last year looked like he might be interested at times in being the best player in the world. Nicholas Backstrom gets most of that time.
Right.
But when you're on the power play and other situations, so he may get some opportunities to play with, a couple of higher-end guys that he didn't get to in Toronto.
How does he work with Adam Oates?
Adam Oates has had great success with getting guys to play his way, and most specifically with both Ovechkin and Ilya Kovalchuk, getting them to switch from being left wingers, guys right-handed shots playing on their off wing, and convincing them to play on the right side, and then those guys buying in and actually being successful. So he might be a guy who can get inside Grabowski's head. I don't think many people would question the talent on Grabowski. He can skate, he can handle the puck, he can shoot it. Just can't hit that big square net thing. Actually rectangular. So he might have some success. Different situations. Maybe the contract in Toronto never fit very well with him. He might go down there, disappear a little bit, put up good numbers. But the possession time is what you got to focus on.
Possession time. Okay. How does that differ from Corsi? I have to learn this Corsi thing, don't I?
I should go, I need to... to at some time spend some time. Well, James Myrtle at your paper, he knows something about this stuff, and I think he's a proponent. Would that be fair to say of some of these newfangled?
Yeah. You're right. We had
and again.
This,
I'm
the
not
same
dismissing
argument.
It.
No, it's just it's funny because talked a little bit about some of the stuff John Farrell had to say at this conference. He was at about how. The Jays, comparing the difference in how the Jays and the Red Sox develop players. And it was kind of getting around to that as well, the idea that some organizations may be too scout intensive, other organizations can be too, can be sort of numerically focused. I think like anything else, if it's like baseball, at some point somebody will find the middle ground. And I'm sure it'll probably be the same way with hockey. You look at a team like Tampa Bay. Tampa Bay does a lot of statistical-based analysis and all that good stuff. But generally what they do, they keep everybody healthy. They keep their pitchers healthy. They get real good pitchers, and they keep them healthy. And at the end of the day, to me, that trumps out whatever you're doing statistically. If I can draft a bunch of guys who are 6'5 and throw 95 miles an hour and have two different pitches – I'm probably going to be successful. I want to talk to you about something you wrote about yesterday and a story that kind of fascinated me. I just assumed that when I went away in holidays that Nazem Kadri and the Leafs would get something done. That I'd come back. Because to me, it seems that we all know how this is going to end. Read what you had to say about it yesterday. I was surprised, frankly, at how big the gulf was between these two sides.
Oh, no, it's huge. And here's... If I would, no, I'm not Nazem Kadri's agent. In fact, I'm nobody's agent.
Mm-hmm.
You're
your own agent.
Here's what I would, if I were his agent,
yes.
In future.
Yes.
When you're preparing for the season and skating with the other guys and you don't have a contract, don't tell all of them how much money you're looking for.
promised, yes.
Because
not a good idea.
They're going to tell their friends, and their friends are going to tell their friends, and soon everybody's going to know that Nazem Kadri's looking for $6 million a year from the Toronto Maple Leafs. And guys he's skating with on a daily basis are giving him the gears for this.
Mm-hmm.
Are you crazy? What do you think? And he's going in the paper saying, I'm being quite reasonable. I don't know what the problem would be. So, you know, I would say the gulf is at least $3 million a year and at least 4 years.
And that's, you know, my understanding of the lease salary cap. That's not a let's just split the difference and we'll all go home happy gulf, is it?
I'm not sure the cap is as big an issue as just basic common sense. This is a player who, while we'd all agree, has terrific skill. Has not yet played a full season in the National Hockey League.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure you can turn around and give that guy $6 million and have it make any sense, mostly because that if he was making $6 million a year, and maybe that's just his opening
sure.
gambit, whatever. If he was making that, he'd be making more than Joffrey Leupel. You know, he'd be making, I'm not sure what Phil Kessel's actual salary is this year, but he'd be right there.
Mm-hmm.
You need... In any sport, particularly if you've got a cap, you need for it to make sense some kind of a pecking order.
Mm-hmm.
Some kind of a, you know, if what you've done has got to relate to how other guys, or you can create a big, big problem.
Do you see this going the same way that the PK Subban thing went?
Yeah.
Just a couple of games.
With about the same conclusion.
And my thinking of that is, that happened last year with PK Subban, or this past season, I should say, with PK Subban. I mean, at no point have I heard anybody talk about Nazem Kadri the way people were talking about PK Subban as one of the next great defensemen. That's what confuses
me.
How his people can't be using that as an example, can they? Because to me, he's. I mean, I'm sorry, PK Subban's on a slightly different level than
I'm sure he's looking
Nazem
at guys
Kadri
like who have just recently signed longer term deals. A guy like. Matt Duchene in Colorado and guys like that. That's who he's comparing himself to, I would imagine.
But even Duchene's got, he's had a couple of full seasons, hasn't he?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I think you've got to play one full season before you can. So it's a bit of a, to me, it's a bit about Nazem Kadri. It's a bit about one of the quirky parts of the CBA that they still haven't really got worked out very well yet because they have to come up with these bridge contracts, these little tricks to get them from their entry level to later on in their career. But I do think Kadri's got to be a little careful here. A, he's not going to get, $6 million or $5 million a year. He's not going to get it.
Mm-hmm.
He's dealing with a team that made the playoffs last year and a general manager who just got a new contract. This is not a general manager, Dave Nonis, who's all of a sudden going to get happy feet and get nervous because a player without a full year in the league says, well, I'm not playing. This is not going to happen. And I think he's not going to get much support in the dressing room. Now, will he get support on Saturday night, Hockey Night in Canada? Don Cherry has been one of Nazem Kadri's biggest supporters. He might get support there.
I can't imagine that the fan base, whatever we call them, the fan base, I can't imagine it'd be a great deal of support from there, do you?
No, because I don't think he's... I think even last year, when he put up whatever it was, 44 points or whatever, 40-some points in 40-some games, whatever it was, there are still enough people saying, okay, I want to see more.
Yeah.
And then he didn't really deliver much of anything in the postseason.
Yeah.
I mean, he got schooled by David Krejci and Patrice Bergeron and those guys. He wasn't able to, you know, provide that kind of, particularly defensively. He's a young guy who's got great upside and still lots to learn. Now, what's fair or not fair and who's greedy and who's not, whatever, I don't think it even matters.
Right.
But you've got to fit somewhere and you've got to be reasonable. And I'm sure at the end of the day, he'll end up with a 2-year contract worth about $6 million. He'll get about between $2.5 and $3 million a year, and they'll go on from there. But there could be a bit of a fight to get there.
Given what we know about, what we think we know about Nazem Kadri's personality, I mean, all the stuff that was said about him, you know, Ron Wilson and other people had talked about how he kind of needed an attitude adjustment and all this. all this stuff. Would you be concerned if you were the Leafs about dealing, having to play hardball with this kid?
No. No, and because you know why? I think he's a hard-minded kid who really believes in himself. He believes he's as good as any player in this league right now. He believes that.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, we had this chat yesterday, Elliot and I, and I think sometimes if you're going to be that kind of top-end offensive player, you've got to think that way. I'm as good as Sidney Crosby.
Got to be a little greedy.
I'm as good as these guys. And if you believe that and think you can play at that level, and let's face it, a player like Kadri has played with some of the, you know, he's played with some of the best players growing up. Mm-hmm. Steve Stamkos and all these other guys were guys who were his peers. He doesn't take a back seat to those guys. And it's really a similar attitude in a lot of ways to PK Subban,
mm-hmm.
who even last year said, I'm as good as anybody in this league, and he proved that he was. So I wouldn't worry that playing hardball with Kadri would somehow compromise him. I always think that's a bit exaggerated. And if a guy's that weak-minded,
yeah,
you don't need him anyways. You're gonna have to get rid of him.
And I've got to think, Damian, that whatever he thinks about himself, his agent, his people are telling him this is probably how it's going to play out. Like I can't imagine.
I don't know. He's got a young, relatively inexperienced agent who I don't know much about,
right.
A guy named Brian McDonald. And so, you know, who's got to figure his way out.
Sure.
And also he's looking at saying, if I can do well with this client, I can attract more clients.
Absolutely.
And I'm not trying to paint him as either a neophyte or a guy who's trying to use Kadri. I'm just saying these are the dynamics that go into these negotiations sometimes. So, look, Kadri thought he should have been in the NHL 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And he wasn't ready.
Right.
And he thought he should be in the NHL. The fact that he now sees believes he's a $5 million player or $6 million doesn't shock me. He's that confident a young athlete. And again, I think you want that. The problem is there's a real world that's going to fit in here. And some of it is a salary cap. I mean, they can't afford to pay him that, you know, and at least not right now.
Mm-hmm.
And some of it is sort of reality. I mean, you need a little more evidence than that, I think. And that's where I've always thought baseball seems to have that part of the equation figured out better than most other sports. Well, certainly than hockey. I mean, you know, very few guys, I mean, and probably only Japanese players come mm-hmm. in right away and make big bucks.
Yeah.
It takes you a little while to get there.
Yeah. And the other thing that happens, too, is, I mean, a lot of, it used to be the players would go into arbitration. I mean, I can remember a guy like Marquise Grissom hearing an arbitration. We know how the arbitration process works. You're a player. I'm a team. I basically spend the session telling an arbitrator how much you suck, even though I really want you to come back and win a championship for me. These are the flaws in your game. And I can remember Marquise Grissom coming out from one and the first day in spring training telling the writers, you know, I'm not stealing bases this year. I'm not stealing bases because I went into arbitration. All I heard was Bill Stoneman, who was then the GM, talking about how stolen bases are overvalued, blah, blah, blah. So I'm not going to steal stolen bases. Now you don't get that. Now you have players. Ryan Howard instructed his agent, I don't want to sign a multi-year contract for the first 4 years I'm in the majors. I want to go through the arbitration process year after year after year. I want to understand how you build value up in your career. And it's much different now. Very seldom do you see a guy come out just so angry because he was screwed in arbitration.
Well, I mean, the NHL is a little different as far as arbitration. They do have, in some cases, walk-away rights.
Right, and you also have a salary cap, which is a big
deal. Right, so, but that is an interesting thing, the idea of one-year contracts.
Yeah.
I mean, what if it was all just one-year contracts?
I think a lot of players, I guess it depends on your personality. A lot of players are quite comfortable going year to year. And you can make a ton of money, especially between your third, fourth, and fifth. You can make a ton of money in baseball just saying, nope, I'm going to go to arbitration.
I mean, Grabowski, who we started this conversation talking about, he signed a five-year deal worth, something, I think, $27.5 million, something like that. He gets bought out, so he gets two-thirds of that and now gets a $3 million deal. There's going to be no tag days for him. But was there great value for him in getting a multi-year deal?
Yeah, got to wonder. John-Paul Morosi of Fox Sports will join us. We're going to talk about Ichiro Suzuki's 4,000th career hit. Or is it his 4,000th career hit?
Do you say yes or no, by the way?
I say yes.
Okay.
Primetime Sports continues on Sportsnet590.ca and Sportsnet.
Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Oh my God, Damien's just having a melt. We're going to talk some soccer, Damien.
No, we talked soccer yesterday.
We're talking some soccer.
No, there's never been 2 days in a row where we've talked soccer on Primetime Sports. It's never happened. And I don't believe this is the time for that to start.
I don't know.
And plus, it's not on my lineup. And if it's not on my lineup, it can't happen.
This lineup is...
It's not on my lineup.
This lineup is a work in progress. So
okay. Do you want to debate this what Pete Rose is saying?
Yeah, I think we will. We should tell people, by the way, this is Primetime Sports.
Yes.
And I'm not Bob McCown. McCown's still in holidays.
Nope.
I was asking people, how does this work? He's on holidays. When I go on holidays, I come back. He's still on holidays.
He's got a better deal than you.
That's true.
Like way better.
That's true.
Like way, way, way better.
That's true. But what he does not have right now is the pleasure of talking to John Paul Morosi of Fox Sports, which we do. Hello, Mr. Morosi.
Jeff, I was told that I was supposed to give my pick for the Scudetto in Serie A, and I would pick Juventus again. So there you go, Damien. One soccer line from an Italian here.
Well, let me ask you this. I'll tell you this. You can call a guy, and he'll probably tell you how the Scudetto is going to finish, because I'm sure it's already been fixed.
Right. That is exactly right. Whoever pays the officials the most, they will win.
Just a minute here. I got to hang on.
See, the good thing is JP...
Fox doesn't have any headphones.
Well,
there.
I just realized, and the good thing is JP speaks loud enough that I can hear him anyway.
No, I just got it turned up.
That's also true.
I got it turned up so loud. So tell me, 4,000 professional hits for Ichiro Suzuki, and it seems as if people are sort of having a bit of a struggle with trying to put this in some sort of context, John. And to me, it's pretty simple. I mean, you know, nicely done. You got 4,000 hits in two leagues. I don't, you know, Pete Rose has now come out and said that Ichiro can't catch him. And with all due respect to Pete Rose, I don't remember anybody saying, hey, 4,000 career hits for Ichiro Suzuki. He's only 673 away from Pete Rose. I think almost everybody's approach this in the right way, haven't they? I don't understand why anybody get upset about it.
I agree. I think this is just unfortunately a symptom of baseball today and probably our larger sports culture that we can't just sit here and appreciate something the man has done.
Can we work steroids into this somehow?
Well, I will say this. It is, okay, do we believe for the long haul over the last 50 years, let's say, has the Japanese Professional League been on par with Major League Baseball competitively? Probably not. I mean, that's being honest. However, in my estimation, we should recognize the historic achievement of Ichiro Suzuki in terms of his achievements in both leagues. Yes, that is a major league. You can acquire major league players from the Japanese major leagues to the major leagues based in North America. That is considered a major league by Major League Baseball when they talk about the Japanese major leagues. And also, this to me is more than any number. It's the historical context in which we must view it. We must appreciate Ichiro Suzuki as the first player from Japan to come over and prove that an everyday Japanese player can come over here and be a successful, obviously, high-end Hall of Fame-type player. Now, remember, as sort of backwards as it sounds, there was the perception, okay, Japanese pitchers can come over, but we're not sure about position players. That was the perception. As strange and really misguided as that sounds, people believe that. And obviously, he came over and changed a lot of minds, and for that, I tip the cap. I think it's a great achievement. We should appreciate his historical contribution to the sport.
You know what? And when you put it in that way, to me, there is that good comparison with Warren Moon. Because Warren Moon came along at a time when people thought, can't have a black quarterback.
Right.
Not good enough. Mm-hmm. He came to Canada, did what he did there, went to the NFL, did what he did there, changed people's minds on as he should have been. I guess what you said, people, you know, we should applaud him for what he's done. I'm not sure what he's done. Suzuki, and Jeff and I were having that debate, and we know what Pete Rose is saying, and I'm not sure I know what Suzuki's done. And when you say they're the major leagues, there are players that can come over there and come and play here. Well, there are players in AAA who could be playing in the major leagues for different players as well. I don't have a strong opinion, but I'm not sure it's 4,000 hits unless you're going to give, as Pete Rose argues, give him credit for his 427 hits in the minors.
Well, I think, first of all, it's a great point that you raised. I think two things. Number one, sadly, because of the PED era, and there you go, Jeff, my mention of my standard mention.
There you go. Thank you very much.
Many things in baseball today are completely within the eye of the beholder. Mm-hmm. Who, if we were talking today, who is the single-season home run leader in our estimation? Who is the all-time home run leader in our estimation, rightfully, justifiably, that we consider to be the standard bearer for the sport? I would say, respectively, Maris and Aaron. That's what I believe. That's my personal benchmarks that I set for myself in my own mind, recognizing that achievement. That's how I look at it. But now when we talk about professional hits, I would say the better way to phrase that is major league hits, small m, small l. Now, Major League Baseball, MLB, capital M, capital L, capital B, that refers to the 30 teams that play in North America. But that is considered, Nippon Professional Baseball, as it is called, is considered a major league. That is the major league of that country, lowercase m, lowercase l. And obviously, if you want to talk about the overall competitiveness of that league, you only need to look at the World Baseball Classic results, the first three that we've had. They won the first two, and they made it to the semifinals this time with a strictly NPB entire team. They had not one major league player on that roster. They made it all the way to the semifinals. I mean, that is a very, very, very good league, and anybody that's watched it and talked to people there, they know how strong that league is.
You know, but here's the thing, and we're joined by John Paul Morosi of Fox Sports. There's a couple of things that work here. First of all, he does have 2,720 now. Just got a double here, 2,723 major league hits.
We can just count it as it goes along.
Yeah, so we're not talking about a guy who's got 3,640 hits in Japan and 400 in the majors.
No.
I mean, we're talking about a guy who, there's a pretty representative sample size there. But beyond that, you know, when this guy does go into the Hall of Fame, he's going to be a first ballot Hall of Famer. And I guarantee you that all his plaque is going to say, you know, accumulated whatever, 4,000 blank, blank, blank hits as a professional, comma, 2,000 blank, blank, blank in the major leagues. I just find it odd that anybody, Pete Rose or anybody, should really have an issue with this.
Right. I mean, this to me is Pete Rose trying to get his name in the news again because he has this outside hope that his sins will be somehow viewed as less egregious than the steroid era, and he'll find some way to get back into baseball in the Hall of Fame. That's the agenda here. I think everybody realizes that. He wants his name in the news. He's got an opinion. I understand he wants to get his perspective out there. But it's unfortunate that in this day and age, we can't just step back and say, wow, this is a great achievement. Let's celebrate the man instead of trying to figure out, well, is it really technically this? No, it's 4,000 hits between the Japanese major leagues and the major leagues in North America. Let's respect it. Let's celebrate it. And I think, to your point, Jeff, on that plaque in Cooperstown, it's going to talk about his establishment of the notion that, again, it sounds so backward, but that people used to believe that Japanese players could not be everyday players in the major leagues here. That is, I think, above any number, that single accomplishment to me is going to be the biggest thing we talk about with Ichiro Suzuki.
See, now, I don't think I'd ever thought I'd ever say this, but I'm going to say it now. To be fair to Pete Rose, someone asked him about it.
Yeah, I know.
And he answered the question. And he also said, listen, if I'm voting today for the Hall of Fame, Ichiro has got my vote. He's got the gold gloves, the golden arms, a lot of hits. There's nothing wrong with this game. I'm not sure, JP, if he was really, really trying to use this but that said, he also makes one other interesting argument when he's discussing the thing. And he says, and basically that to get to 4,000, he did get that how many hits in the Japanese league? 12,000 or whatever.
1,300.
Right. So he spent 8 years there, right?
Yep.
That gave him a good head start towards 4,000 hits that a lot of guys playing in the major leagues might not have. Anyways, I mean, you can go around and round and round this. I guess that's my question, and I'm still not sure I'm getting the answer, is what is this? But, I mean, none of us would disagree that he's a great player. He's a first ballot Hall of Famer, and he's a pioneer. And maybe, sure, as you say, maybe we should just leave it at that.
Right, and I do think, and I think that we could have parallels all day if we were to recognize, you know, 20 years from now, if a player spends 10 years in the KHL and then 10 years in the NHL, how do we view the points there? How would we tabulate that from a hockey standpoint?
Yep.
And I do think part of it, I think, is the lens through which we view our leagues in North America. Do we, you know, certainly in soccer, obviously the second soccer point of the conversation, we acknowledge that the best leagues are not on our continent. But in baseball and hockey and basketball and football, we certainly believe the best leagues of those sports are all here. Now, the one point about the baseball leagues that I think is important to make is it's hard for us, and the WBC came up, and we see how the American team is, I think, what, like 10-10 all time, or they're basically 500. I mean, there are arguments to be made that basically in baseball, that in Japan and also in Korea, where there's a lot more barriers to coming to North America, we have to acknowledge those leagues are a lot closer competitively to our league than we would like it, than we would like to think that they are. I mean,
let me ask you on that though.
The way we're wrestling with this achievement, I think, is maybe symptomatic of the fact that we cannot fathom that maybe there's a league that's close to as good as our league. I think it's kind of a fascinating debate. Really, it's about us as much as it is about the achievement.
The only thing I would pick on that with that argument is Major League Baseball is not just American players. Major League Baseball is everybody.
Right.
So when you say, well, the U.S., this is their record, therefore this is a reflection of Major League Baseball, Major League Baseball is a lot more than just American players.
Sure. It is, but also because of the way the reserve system works in the Korean professional baseball, there are tremendous barriers to getting players out of Korea. It's really based on, I don't know every nuance about it, but it actually has some relationship to do with their military exemptions and the military obligations there, and also Cuba. I mean, the players come from Cuba, and we've just seen the last few years. I mean, the way Cespedes came in, the way Chapman came in, certainly the way Puig came in this year. When you think if Cuba opened up all of a sudden, how many great players, and we don't even know the numbers that are being established there. We may see it soon here with Abreu, the latest guy to come out, who reportedly has defected recently. So there are all these barriers where it is not as efficient of a market in terms of the Major League Baseball getting all the best players as we might kind of conceive of it being.
John, before we let you go, very quick exit question here. I know both you and Ken Rosenthal have written a lot about Yasiel Puig's problems with the Dodgers, his refusal to hit the cutoff man. I got a very simple question for you. I'm operating under the assumption the Dodgers make the playoffs this year. Should I be worried if I'm a Dodgers fan about Yasiel Puig in the eighth or ninth inning of a big game making a stupid decision?
Yes, yes. And I think they're trying their best to address it now. My only concern is it might be too late. I mean, he obviously was benched the other day, comes into the go-ahead home run, special player. But there are basic things. We've seen it all the time in postseason baseball. You got to make the simple plays. And unless he learns how to do that, it's a huge concern. That's one reason why he was benched this week. And I think until he proves over a long period of time that he's mastered the basic fundamentals, it's going to continue to be a concern for the Dodgers and their fans.
John, as always, we appreciate your time.
My pleasure. Great talking to you guys. And we'll be talking about the Scudetto again.
The Scudetto, okay, absolutely. Keep an eye on Lazio this year. I don't even know if you... I don't know. Anyhow, that's John Paul. We're going to talk soccer.
One last little point.
Yes, very quickly.
I was going to make it to him, but talking about, you know, Korea, if that would open up, Cuba. They said the same thing when the fall of the Soviet Union. Wow, all those players will come over here. There's fewer players today of Russian descent in the NHL. It doesn't necessarily work that way.
No, it doesn't always.
It's a really fascinating to compare baseball in different countries, and the World Baseball Classic has only added to the complexity of that argument.
And that's what I was going to say. I think it's changed some people's opinions about other leagues and about the way the game's played around the world. Back with more Primetime on Sportsnet590.ca and Sportsnet.
Set your clock radio. It's Brady and Lang in the morning. Tomorrow starting at 5:30 a.m. Now more of what you want to hear on Sportsnet 590. The Fan.
We learn more from a 3-minute record.
heard back. This is probably the longest I've heard that song in a long time. Welcome back to Primetime Sports for Thursday, August 22nd. Jeff Blair sitting in for Bob and Cowan. Damian Cox, my co-host.
And what are we on, Jeff?
We're on a we're on Sportsnet590.ca yes. and Sportsnet.
Oh. Okay. That's good.
Here you go. See? That's Sportsnet catch-all. We're on Sportsnet.
Yep.
The Full Tilt Poker Montreal Festival is coming up in September.
Big one.
Big one.
Maybe the biggest ever in Canada?
Ever.
Yeah.
Jonathan Duhamel is, of course, a well-known Canadian poker player. He's also participating in the NHL Alumni Charity Poker Tournament, which will air on Sportsnet 360 in December. Phil Kessel, Theo Fleury, Darcy Tucker, and Brad May involved in that. Jonathan Duhamel joins us on Primetime Sports. Thank you so much for doing this. I thought you'd have your hoodie on.
Yeah, I know. I don't wear it for interviews, though.
Oh, I thought you would. I was kind of looking for it. Actually, before we talk a little bit about what you're up to, tell me about the hoodie.
Well, I don't know. It was just a lucky hoodie at that point. I remember, I think on day one or day two, I was just kind of cold at the Rio because the room was pretty cold. So I bought a hoodie, and I finished the day with a lot of chips, a lot more than what I had before the hoodie.
It's funny how that happens.
Yes, I just kept it on. I just kept it on until the end, and it works, so I'm happy. Well, but now the hoodie's retired, though. I've never wore it since. I just don't want to... You know, it's been a winning hoodie, so I don't want to break it.
tell us a little bit about the Montreal Festival. And also, I know you've got some other plans as well. We were talking off air. I just got back from Spain. You're going to Barcelona. I would presume you'll come back with a hell of a lot more money.
Well, hopefully.
Yeah, I came back with less money than I had when I went. You're probably going to come back with more. But tell us a little bit about the tournament in Montreal and just sort of... Canada really is it's a hotbed of professional poker and poker, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. The tournament might be one of the biggest we've ever had in Canadian soil. It starts on September 21st. Smallest buy-in is $50. It's pretty cheap. The main event is $1,000, and they're expecting, I believe, 1,200 to 1,300 players playing in the main event. So it's going to be a big, big tournament, over $1 million prize pool guaranteed. So, yeah, it's going to be big. It's at the Playground Poker Mansion. And it's going to be a lot of fun. Myself, I'll be playing. And yeah, in Montreal, I think in Canada in general, it gets a lot bigger. They've had a few tournaments before, and it was a big success. And I think that's why Full Tilt partnership with the Playground to have that event in Montreal. And for sure, it's going to be a big success.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, because we talk about Canadian players. Didn't a whole bunch of Canadians do very well at the World Series of Poker this year?
Oh, absolutely.
I vaguely, and I don't follow that closely, but I vaguely remember this being kind of a breakout year for Canadians.
This year, I believe there was 10 bracelet won in by Canadian, which is a record.
Better explain to people what a bracelet is.
A bracelet is when you win a tournament, actually. They have, I think, 50, 55 bracelet events in Vegas during the World Series. So that's in June and July. And mostly it's going to be American winning him because there's way more American playing in the tournament. And so for Canadians to have 10 victories, 10 bracelets, it's a record. And also on the final table of the main event, which will be in November, there's another guy from Montreal, Marc-Étienne McLaughlin. He's on the final table also, the same as I was in 2010. So again, just a lot of success by Canadians. And just to start, I think, because we have a lot of young kids doing pretty well in some smaller tournaments. So we'll see a lot of success in the future years.
Jonathan Duhamel joins us on Primetime Sports. You've had a lot of success, obviously. With that success, Jonathan, is there a change in how your competitors view you? You know,
some
the more money you or are there still guys that there may be guys or women that you have never that have never been able to beat you, but still think they're better than you, right? Is there been a change at all?
Yeah, well, what's the change also is that some people I've never played against have played with, and they have seen me on TV, though. They've seen how I play on TV and stuff like that. So they actually might change the way they're playing against you. They might play more aggressive, more passively or stuff like that because they've seen you on TV. So they've seen how you play, your strategy and stuff like that. So you as a player have to try to figure out who knows that, who doesn't know that, and then adjust the way you play poker so they can't read your strategy and they can't read your cards.
Can you get overexposed as a poker player?
No,
you
know, more so than you,
being
Jeff.
TV? You should talk.
Well, it depends. I mean, it depends if you only have one way of playing, then it might be a problem for you. But if you're able to adapt the way you play you know, adapt to situations, different situations and stuff like that, then you should be all right, because basically you just want to see your opponent and just play. Your playing style is going to depend on how he plays. You're just going to, let's say he plays passive, you're going to be playing aggressive and stuff like that. So
now we talked about this the tournament that's going to be aired in, when is it? In
September 21st.
Right, where you play with a bunch of hockey players.
Yeah.
We always know from golf, everybody just assumes that hockey players are good golfers, and many of them are very, very good. Phil Kessel's a terrific golfer. There's a bunch of guys. So you played with
the Leafs have a lot of practice golf.
Yeah, they have more time.
Fastball down the middle.
Right there, you go. So you play in this one with Kessel, Fleury, Tucker, and May. Would you say hockey players are in general good poker players, or
I would think yes, because you know they've done a lot of those interviews and stuff like that. So actually, their poker face is pretty good. They're kind of tough to read, but for the rest, I think they play quite a lot on the plane and because they travel a lot too, so they have a little bit of free time. So yeah, I played with a few of them. I played with Phil, Guy Carbonneau was, I was very lucky to play with him, you know, just because of 93, good old memories. And so, yeah, it was definitely a lot of fun. Some of them going to be very aggressive. Some of them going to be more passive, but it looks like the way they play on the ice, or they played on the ice, is about the same as how they play poker also.
Really?
Yeah, it's pretty funny. You see guys like Darcy Tucker is going to play super aggressive while at the poker table. So it's kind of a little bit the same thing as on the ice. So it's pretty fun.
Has there been a pro athlete you've played against, a hockey player or whoever, a pro athlete that you've gone, wow, this guy could be really good? Has there been a guy like that?
Well, actually, Phil Kessel.
I was going to say, now you played with Phil this year.
Yeah,
right?
He really surprised me. He was on my table. I can't see the result of the charity shootout, but he surprised me. He played really well, and I was really surprised because I had no clue what to expect. It was the first time I was playing with him, and boy, he made some moves. He knew how to play.
Jonathan, we appreciate you joining us. Thanks so much.
All right, thank you.
The event, I'm trying to find here, the Full Tilt Poker Montreal Festival comes up in September. Jonathan Duhamel will be there. He's also taken part in the NHL Alumni Charity Poker Tournament, which will air on Sportsnet 360 in December. Phil Kessel, Theo Fleury, Darcy Tucker, and Brad May also involved. Jonathan, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
When we come back, Chris Chelios. I think he's a pretty good poker player. Chris Chelios,
I bet
hockey
you
Hall
he'd
of
be aggressive.
He certainly would be aggressive. This is Primetime Sports on Sportsnet 590.ca and on Sportsnet.